Coming up next on Tech News Today, Facebook is taking out ads in British newspapers to educate on false news. We might know what the FBI paid for access to the San Bernardino Terrace iPhone. CityMapper is getting into the bus business, and Liz Gaines from 60dB talks about a bunch of things, including how virtual trespassing by Pokemon Go players could affect AR in the long run. All that more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1763, recorded Monday, May 8th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you about the technology news and why it matters. I am Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. Did you have a good weekend?
Yes, it was a lot of soccer. I did my soccer mom duties. It was very exciting. Both games were won.
Excellent.
Yes.
That's soccer mom duties right there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because of me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because you were there, it happened that way. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Facebook is running full-page ads in British newspapers in an attempt to educate the public in advance of the June 8th parliamentary election in Britain. Facebook urged users to be skeptical of potential misinformation online, as well as announced the removal of tens of thousands of accounts it believes were spreading false news across the network. Facebook says its systems are now monitoring and flagging accounts that match certain patterns and duplicate false news posts from other offending accounts. And yeah, I mean, I feel like another week, another move by Facebook. I don't know why I find it interesting that Facebook took to the newspaper to say, hey, there's fake news on our network. So come to our network, one, and use it. But here's how you defend yourself from the fake news that's on our network.
Right, because you think people are still left like reading the actual paper, like would be less likely to fall.
Yeah, I wonder. But I mean, from a strict perspective of educating people, that maybe that's a way to reach, you know, a certain group of people that Facebook has determined is valuable in reaching to A, eventually convert into Facebook users if they're not already, but B, also to kind of get ahead of any potential threats, let's say, to the election.
Well, I think who they were trying to reach, I mean, I hate to get all, Debbie Downer about it, but I think they were trying to reach regulators who probably read the newspaper because they're mad. They're in the UK. They've been more vocal about how this is Facebook's responsibility to take this down. You know, they're not a US company. So I think that they're just saying like, hey, you got to do something about this. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was sort of like, hey, look, we're doing something about it. You regulators that probably still read the paper and maybe don't even go to Facebook. We're doing something about it. So, I mean, Macron, you know, won the election in France. Mm-hmm. Macron. And a lot of people are saying that it was a more fair election because of everything, because of the cross-check. That's the France-wide bilingual fact-checking collaboration with 37 newsrooms. They went on this like crazy 10-week, we're going to make sure that everyone, you know, knows what fake news is, where it is and where it isn't. So a lot of people are pointing to that and saying, you know, here's why it was a more fair election because we did something about fake news. So, yeah, I think lawmakers in the U.S. have threatened fines to Facebook if they didn't do something about it. So, yes, I applaud their efforts, but I also think they're doing it because they're being forced to.
Yeah. By the way, in France, I think it's something like 30% of France is on Facebook. It's actually a really low percentage. Mm. Wonder if that has anything to do with kind of the difference in perspective. But anyway, so the ad listed tips for spotting false news, 10 items on the list. Things that seem kind of like no-duh items, but worth repeating, I suppose. Just a few, you know, look closely at your URLs, investigate the source. That's important. Be skeptical of headlines. Be skeptical. Be skeptical of everything on the internet, not just on Facebook, but there you go.
Yeah, I thought there was one, consider the photos, which I looked at. I'm like, oh, how do we consider the photos?
But no, just consider them.
But really, like, look to see if they're Photoshopped. And yeah, also, it was good advice. Look the photos up. See where they might have come from. You know, mm-hmm. Are they stolen from something else? It's good for all of us, I think. But it's this basic stuff. You know, it's not talking about like the psychological stuff, the confirmation bias. Like we believe this because we want to believe it, because it confirms what we already believe. And you're not going to be able to, you know, explain that and fix that from a newspaper.
In a full page ad.
The Associated Press says the FBI paid a private company $900,000 to hack the iPhone of the San Bernardino killer last year. Despite the Freedom of Information Act, James Comey had claimed that the total would remain classified, but during Comey's Senate Judiciary Committee meeting last week, Senator Dianne Feinstein confirmed that the FBI had to pay that $900,000 to open it. The total isn't a complete surprise, but it's a little less than what we had guessed. Last year, Comey said they paid more than the total of his salary for his remaining 7 years on the job, which would be over $1 million. Now, it's unclear whether Comey is nauseous about this or not, but he was quoted as saying, "Worth it."
Yeah.
Probably didn't say it like that. Worth it.
Worth it. Still, the Justice Department is not releasing the actual amount. They say that doing so could actually be used by, air quotes, hostile entities to create countermeasures and mess with the FBI's intelligence gathering efforts by knowing how much it cost. I'm not sure I understand that, but I think they just really don't want anyone to actually know.
Well, I mean, the thing is, they didn't have to pay anything. Like, you know, they didn't have to pay anything.
Well, they did.
Well, you know what I mean? They messed up from the first moment because they were trying to enter passwords, and they wouldn't have had to do that. You know, if we remember back, and it's a complicated story. Some people will say like they shouldn't have had to pay that. Apple should have, you know, given them that information.
Oh, right.
And so it's interesting. I mean, we don't know if Feinstein really knew the number either. Like it could have been like, oh, I heard it was $900,000, or maybe that's how much she thinks Comey made, or, you know, so it was sort of like an offhanded comment. I think it's just interesting because, you know, this story, we've been following it for so long, and that was the one thing they were like, it's classified. And so she just threw it out there like,
Yep. City Mapper, a mapping and transportation app, is broadening its business in a major way by announcing that it's getting into the bus business. The City Mapper Smart Bus, or the CMX1, will hit the streets of London on a fixed route with stops along the way, and aims to reinvent how a bus operates in the confines of public transportation. The new buses will begin running tomorrow, May 9th, in a circular route in downtown London to start off with. They actually have two different bus types, a regular one and then a smaller one, they say, which is a better fit for crowded cities. They're just pointing out the fact that, like, in this day and age, there hasn't been a whole lot of innovation around public transportation in dense cities. They usually end up, you know, getting their public transportation system and really updating it very lightly, if at all, for decades. And, so they're integrating things like smart displays that show passengers exactly where they are in real time, similar to what you'd see on your phone if you were navigating somewhere. Custom-built software for scheduling, driver management, that sort of stuff. That's all better awareness around traffic and that sort of stuff, all kind of derived from this, what they've gathered, what they've learned from their software creation of City Mapper, and kind of moving that into the public transportation model.
I mean, what we've seen mostly in changes to bus systems in San Francisco and a lot of other places, just gentrification. You know, it's like, oh, we'll have these special buses that just go to Google, and they just go, you know, to Facebook, and you're going to have snacks and really expensive water and Wi-Fi, and then you don't have to ride the bus with the regular people, you know, and that those have not succeeded, nor is it, I think, a good idea to do that. I mean, they failed miserably. They were taking up the spot of the Muni bus, like making the people riding the regular bus that costs $1.50 wait for them and their snacks and expensive water. And so and the other thing is, you know, Uber. Like, okay, well, I don't want to ride the bus. I'm just going to take an Uber because I have enough money to do that. So this is nice that someone has actually, once has the idea to disrupt the bus system. Burke has something to say. So
it's about getting paid. Burke says, in my experience in San Francisco, the main issue is getting people to pay. Yeah, they actually don't mention in here kind of the cost of riding the bus when compared to the traditional metro system in the city. I wonder if it's kind of baked into that cost or if it's a separate fee or what it is.
Do you mean people like taxpayers or are you saying people paying, like getting on and not paying?
People getting on and not paying.
I always paid for the bus.
Yeah, Burke also paid. So did I.
I don't, do you think that's the problem, the bus, that people get on and don't pay?
Burke says in San Francisco that is definitely the problem.
Well, I like the idea of this, but they're working with the transport for London. So they're working with the city. It's not just an outside, you know, organization or like an Uber, you know, that is just running roughshod over the regulations. They have USB charging for your smartphone.
Oh, sold. Mm-hmm. Not autonomous. I know we're in this world where everything technological applied to transportation, we suddenly, you know, imply or assume that it's going to be autonomous. No, here it's trained human drivers. Human drivers for now. You have to imagine it's in their discussion. But basically, they say that they're analyzing their own data and kind of taking a look at how people traditionally move around the city, in this case, in London, for example, to start off with, and just realizing that the current metro system doesn't necessarily apply perfectly to the way people actually need to get from point A to point B. And a system like this could be a little bit more flexible. It could maybe, I don't know if that means changing its routes based on the changing demands of people, although that would get confusing if you were a passenger trying to catch a bus, but being just a little bit more dynamic about how they serve the city.
City Mapper was an app designed, it was a navigation app. So they've collected all this data of how people travel from place to place. One would assume that, like, you know, a public bus system has no way of collecting that data, you know, just like, you know, Google Maps has all this data about where we go. And so now they've collected this data and to be able to actually use it and put it into practice. And I guess I could see how they could figure out the best ways people are traveling.
How people are using their app to figure out how they get from point A to point B using the public transportation that's there now and creating something better that it actually puts them in a pretty powerful position in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Eagle-eyed friend of the show, Brad Sams from Thorot.com, has spotted a new Harman Kardon Amazon Echo clone powered by Cortana. Microsoft is calling the device the Invoke. It's slim and stylish and probably boasts a better speaker than my Alexa. The photos were leaked, maybe on purpose, but Microsoft and Harman Kardon have confirmed that the Home Assistant will go on sale this fall, and it could include Skype calling.
Audio calling, not video calling, because there's no screen on this, not on this.
Right, Skype audio calling, but that there is the screen. The Wall Street Journal also says that Amazon is coming out with a screen Echo, like what we talked about last week, and it will have Wi-Fi calling, like, you know, video calling.
Yeah, it could happen as soon as tomorrow on that one. So, you know, that we might actually have news to talk about to more at greater length on that tomorrow. But the Harman Kardon device actually looks interesting. I think I'm fascinated by the idea that Harman Kardon is actually owned by Samsung. And I don't know, what's the future of a Bixby voice assistant in your home?
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, I don't know how Samsung operates Harman Kardon. They probably operate it completely separately. And, you know, maybe they're following the model of be in all places in that regard. Mm-hmm. But it looks nice. 7 mics, far field voice recognition, they say noise reduction, echo cancellation. So it'd be good in loud environments, which you kind of need in this type of device. I think that's a lesson that has been learned through time with the Echo and with Google Home, that if it doesn't hear your wake word because of a noisy environment, then its usability goes through the floor. And then a touch to surprise, that's the name of it, UI panel on top. Touch to surprise, Cortana lighting. I still don't even know what that means. I don't understand. What
Cortana
is
Cortana lighting? It's that swirly thing?
Yeah, but touch to surprise.
Oh, it's touch to surprise.
I really don't understand. Like, that's
it doesn't
not,
sound good.
I know. I don't want a surprise. I want you to do
like
the thing I want
I
you to
want.
Do.
It's like surprise, touch to surprise, force touch, 3D. It's all bad.
Surprise, we emptied your bank account. Very nice, Cortana. U.S. only at launch. So there's that.
Yeah. And then the Amazon, I'm sure you're going to have to sign up to get invited to get that Echo, just like you had to do with the Alexa and the Dot and the Echo Look.
Oh, with the screen.
Yeah. So, I mean, they might announce it tomorrow, but it'll be a while.
I'm sure we'll get one here at the studio and take a look.
I want to be able to look at my Echo. I don't want my Echo to look at me.
But it might have a camera on it.
I don't want that.
But
I guess it would have to have a camera on it, right? If you're going to have
If you're going to have video chatting from it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it would be in your kitchen, not in your bedroom.
Right.
So.
Well, mine's in my bathroom right now, so.
That wouldn't work either.
I won't keep that.
That's not going to work. We're gonna have to rethink how you use the Echo with this new lineup of devices. Mm-hmm. Berg thinks Touch to Surprise is the robotic hand. What do you mean? What do you mean? Explain. I don't want to go any further into this. Parrot, the French drone company that had a bit of a rough year in 2016, announced a new division that will be focused on creating drones for the prosumer market, let's say. Parrot Professional will release drones in the $1,000 to $5,000 range and is positioning them towards specialized uses in small business. The company plans to release three new models starting this summer. Just as an example, the Disco Pro AG is a modified Disco drone from their Disco drone family. Apps and attachments available as options that are aimed at farmers who are interested in doing things like analyzing their crops, using the drone for specific purposes, 200 acres of coverage in 30 minutes, and that would be available in June for $5,000. So kind of going from the, hey, we've got a drone, do whatever you want with it and figure it out, to let's package these things so that they're really good for a specific purpose. Maybe that'll be better for Parrot because they missed sales in Q4. They laid off a third of their workforce earlier this year, so they need to, remarket themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like let's charge another $1,000 and it's for farmers or right. It's for real estate agents or or construction, real estate, agriculture. Those are the ideas. So was it, were they going to use it for like spraying crops or just analyzing
crops? No, I don't think you're spraying any crops with this drone, but I think you use it for analysis. You use it for keeping tabs on your crops. You mentioned real estate. The Bebop quadcopter would be available 3D mapping software. So it's not just like, hey, here's the drone and we think it would be good for this thing. They're actually putting thought and design into like software and accessories that help it to achieve whatever that task is. So real estate construction uses with that 3D mapping software, that would be $1,099.
Yeah. Real estate agents, that's who they need to go. Like every real estate agent I know has a drone because like they want a drone anyway because everyone does, but then they can justify it. Like, you know how real estate agents always get new cars too? Yeah. Like they always have like the fancy new cars. It's perfect. But they just need to find all kinds of industries like that where they can justify their toys through their work.
Yeah, it's really nice when you can figure that out. We work at Twit, so
to a certain degree, we kind of know
a little bit about that.
We need drones too.
we're passionate about technology. Turns out we get a lot of technology here at Twit. It really works out well for us. How do real estate agents use drones though? Is it for getting like exterior shots of the homes that they're selling?
Yeah, so then they can put them online and like you can see like the backyard or
They're not flying their drones through the home. Like here I am going through the hallway. Oh, I ran into
not
the
yet.
Wall.
Not yet.
I guess.
I mean, probably some are, but.
There we go.
Okay.
That's okay. That looks pretty good. That I would buy that.
Yeah, that's what Brian's doing over there. He's working on his real estate license.
Good luck with that, Brian.
A quick reminder, you can comment on anything we discuss by emailing tnt@twit.tv. And of course, subscribe to the show by going to our show page. That's twit.tv/TNT. And after the break, Liz Gaines from 60DB is here to discuss all kinds of techie things. John Oliver, free cookies, so many things. But first, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper, the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper is a virtual phone system designed for entrepreneurs. Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system, but requires no hardware purchase. So you can use their iOS or their Android app, and then callers reach you wherever you are on your mobile phone. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number so you can maintain your brand. When you make a call, your client will see your Grasshopper caller ID instead of your personal phone number. So you're not confusing them. You're not giving away your personal phone number. You're keeping that number that you've always had for your business. All you have to do is select a toll-free or a local number if you don't already have one, then record a custom greeting and add multiple extensions for your business. Toll-free numbers are great for marketing. They make your business sound more professional. You can set up department and employee extension with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. Get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments. You can also send and receive SMS text messages from your business number. Right now, over 250,000 Grasshopper customers exist out there. Why don't you join them? Plans start at just $12 a month. That is not a lot for making you look more professional and letting you go wherever you want and still get your business calls. You have a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's really no reason not to try. Turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. Right now, you can save $50 on your order. All you have to do is go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit. And we thank Grasshopper for their support. Last night on John Oliver's Last Week Tonight, the comedian once again urged his viewers to flood the FCC's website with comments. And those supporters of net neutrality managed to bring down the site again. If you missed the segment, one of the places where you can watch it is 60DB, a personalized website and app and skill for the Amazon Echo for short form audio and video. And joining us today is one of the founders of 60DB, Liz Gaines. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. So what did you make of Oliver's speech last night?
Oh, well, he's great. I mean, he manages in 20 minutes to come up with like 99 different reasons why net neutrality is entertaining, which, you know, from a starting point of saying it's not, saying it's a really boring topic. So I think he's a national treasure.
I agree. So explain for people who haven't downloaded 60DB or haven't heard us talk about it. You can watch, how can you, what else can you watch besides John Oliver?
We're mostly around listening, and you can get a lot out of that segment by just listening to it. But we do play the video in the background if you happen to be near your phone or device you want to look at. But I usually listen to 60DB in my car where I'm not looking down at the video while I'm driving. Promise. But 60DB is a personalized radio app. So, you know, radio is fantastic. We love to listen to things you can do while you're driving, while you're doing the dishes, while you're walking your dog. But it is kind of locked in this weird broadcast experience, except for this little tiny part of it called long form podcasts, which are awesome and have their own apps, but are like just a tiny piece of the world of things you want to listen to. So we're for podcasts, but we're also for short stuff. And we make you a personalized playlist of all sorts of different things you want to listen to. So what you might hear if you turn on public radio, but also sports or geeky tech stuff, which you don't really get. Or, I don't know, what did I have? I had like a barbecue show in my feed the other day, like all sorts of random things. And it was well-targeted. I am into barbecue. Oh, I had a good one about telescopes today. I've definitely gotten to amateur astronomy lately. So it's kind of like, you just press play and more things come into line for you. And it looks prettier today because we just launched a redesign.
Well, it's a good point in terms of listening to video because, you know, a lot of times I would think about John Oliver, oh, I want to watch that, but I don't have time to sit down.
I know, he's so good, but it's like, yeah, even though it's only once a week, not even all year.
So you can like specify and talk about your interests. So like we were just talking about net neutrality. If you wanted to catch up, everybody's talking about net neutrality and you want to catch up on it. You said you were going to make like a playlist for net neutrality. So there's like you don't just hear one person's opinion of it. You hear, you can, depending on how long your commute is or how long you're listening, washing dishes, folding laundry, all the other things we do when we listen to podcasts, you can hear different people's perspective on it.
Yeah, especially in the short form format where a playlist starts to make sense. So like it's kind of more like going to Spotify and starting one of their playlists of like, this is my mood, where you don't have to kind of think about what's the next thing you want to queue up. It just starts going for you. And then if you get out of your car and go into your house and you can say, hey, Alexa, restart 60DB, and it'll just go right to where you were when you last were listening.
I'm curious to kind of talk a little bit more about the whole John Oliver piece and the net neutrality, you know, write in to the FCC, make your comment heard. FCC then went down. And I think early reports were that happened because of impact from John Oliver. But then I think the FCC has now said that they say it's from a DDoS. Is that disingenuous, do you think? Or is that an actual indication of like, was it just two opposing forces clashing at the same time?
Yeah, who's to say? I hope we don't have a congressional hearing about what brought the FCC site down.
Yeah, right.
Well, augmented reality is coming, whether we like it or not. There's nothing you or any Squirtle can do about it. The Pokemon Go craze is sort of fizzled, although Leo earlier was wearing around his Pokemon bracelet, wearing it.
Yeah,
like
he was.
A,
he just has
little...
it permanently clipped to his
so
lapel.
It's over for many people, not Leo. But what happened?
The Niantic said that they have 65 million monthly active users. So maybe it's just not still popular for us, but we're out of the loop.
Right. Well, it's not as like there's not crowds of people showing up to parks and leaving their trash behind or going and walking across people's, property, going to the Holocaust Museum, that sort of thing. But you will have a piece coming up about how augmented reality, the effect on the legal effect and how when augmented reality gets in the way of real reality. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I have a story coming out. You guys have the scoop on my story, which is to say it's already out elsewhere. It's actually from the publication Inverse, and it's about how in Milwaukee right now there's a lawsuit over an ordinance that the town put together or the county put together to say augmented reality apps need to ask for permission to get basically like an event permit before they assemble all these people in a park like they did last year when Pokemon Go totally blew up. So that is something that AR apps are not too happy about, because it basically means that before they even get started, before they assemble any crowd, they have to get permission in all these like patchwork of different localities and whatever laws they would pass. So they want to get this precedent overturned, and that's about to go to court.
I mean, that essentially means that, like, it's a non-starter, right? Because, I mean, the world is a very, very big place. And if the world is sprinkled with all these little places that require permission, I mean, that's a shot in the foot of augmented reality, at least in the sense of Pokemon Go and the model of Pokemon Go. Do you think Pokemon Go was good or bad for AR? I mean, it was good because it mainstreamed it a little bit. Bad because of stuff like this. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it got people walking around staring at their phones, pinching to snatch little characters. Like, it got that into the mainstream and kind of showed you how obnoxious people looking at their phones while they're walking around the world were. Like, actually, the Milwaukee County supervisor that this reporter Jordan interviewed for his Inverse piece was hilarious. He was talking about how, like, people were walking around looking at their phones, like, bumping into porta potties, I guess, and knocking over. He was really upset about that. People using AR are not great in regular reality, and that is a problem. Like, this county is not wrong to try to think about how they could regulate it, but this was kind of like the wrong blunt force ordinance, it seems like. And I don't know. I mean, who's to say, but like, it seems kind of likely that this is not going to be the lasting regulation on augmented reality.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So you also are going to have a piece about Maple. That's a food delivery service that is going under. You're going to talk to a Quartz reporter, Allison Griswold, about that. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Maple, which was a creation in part with the chef of Momofuku, David Chang, which was a food delivery startup based in New York. They said today that they are pausing operations. And I'm talking tomorrow to a reporter from Quartz who has kind of a little bit of the inside scoop on how you have a picture on the screen right now of these apparently very tasty cookies that they used to include for free. Well, it turns out like including free cookies in your lunch costs millions and millions of dollars. and so they no longer have a viable business model. But, you know, I guess I appreciate you going into these examples of stories that I'm pursuing. And basically, what I'm doing is kind of taking outlets like Quartz and like Inverse and like the MIT Tech Review I was telling you about. I'm doing this story on machine hearing. We hear a lot about like computer vision, and I'm doing a story based on this MIT Technology Review story about machine hearing and talking about how all the sounds that a car, for instance, hears in the world, like sirens, can really give you a lot of information about what's around you. And that could be used for navigation, for diagnosis of like what that thunk means and what's wrong with your car. I thought that was really fun as a potential audio story. So I go out and talk to those reporters and kind of get those segments into a listenable format and chat with them, add some additional sound. So this is a little preview of if you were to go, you know, download 60dB or check out our website this week, some of the things you would hear on there. But then you don't have to just hear the stuff we make. You can also listen to John Oliver or whoever else talk about you know, other topics of your whatever you happen to be interested in.
I believe that the car is the next available place for a live microphone to move into. And we're already feeling a little weird about a microphone in our kitchen with an Amazon Echo. I just wonder if it's safe to apply that same kind of caution into the connected car with a mic.
That is the place where you want the kind of wake word experience, right? Yeah. Like, you don't want to press a button to say, I want to give my car some instructions.
Yeah. No, I really do love what you guys are doing at 60dB. It feels like if you're used to just turning something on and listening to the radio, you know, hopping in your car and turning on the radio and listening to whatever you have, it's kind of like that, but with customization obviously around it, so you can get a little bit more straight to the things that interest you. So I think you guys are doing an awesome job.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I appreciate you letting me plug it. I hope that that was not too much of a plug.
It wasn't. I mean, no, I really love it too. Like I mean, a lot of people call it Pandora, you know, for radio but I sort of think of it as Tinder, not that I've ever used Tinder, but Tinder for radio, but you get to swipe back. Like that's often like I'll swipe through. I'm like, give me all my options. I'll swipe, swipe, mm-hmm. swipe. And then, you know, you can swipe back and which you can't do in Tinder. The other thing that I really like about it, it's a lot of really diverse voices that, like you said, you don't necessarily hear that. I mean, it's specific topics that aren't necessarily mainstream. You get the mainstream stuff too, but like a lot of different voices that I think need to be heard more. And that's part of what I love about it too.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, I actually have one quick question because prior to 60dB and the work that you're doing with 60dB, I mean, you're a reporter, obviously, you're with Recode, you have, All Things D, you have a rich history in kind of reporting on the other, I don't know, I don't know if it's applicable to say on the other side, but they're definitely different focuses. What mm-hmm. what inspired you to create 60dB in this direction, to go in this direction from what you were doing?
So I did not start DB, but I happened upon them when they're pretty early on. And it's a company founded by people from Netflix and people from NPR. Mm-hmm. And so I stepped in as a person who does not have a lot of audio production experience, but loves listening. And so I joined up because I just thought it was a really smart idea. And I have been here kind of like doing the quick learning of making a piece of audio every day, but also just trying to think about how we can push this forward. So it's been super exciting on that front. Like the thing that I'm thinking about now is how do you transfer kind of the email newsletter that I really enjoy as a news consumer, and I think a lot of people do, to audio. So how do we make playlists that include both content that we make and bring in also other sources and kind of like point you out to other things you might want to listen to and bring that together. So if you check out the app now, we have a few examples of that. Like the one going right now is Summer Jams. And we have some highly entertaining stories about our favorite summer songs of all time, our favorite summer shows of all time. And then we also bring in like a piece from Planet Money about what it is to make the song of the summer. And that kind of just press play on that playlist and you hear stuff from us and stuff from other people. And so I, you know, after years of being a tech reporter and kind of seeing startups come and go, I did take the plunge and join this startup. But part of it is because I just think that there's like so much potential for how you can tell stories in a way that gets to people because people just like to listen.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Liz. 60dB has an update today, so you can get that on your Android or your iPhone device. And Liz can be found on 60dB and at Liz Gaines on Twitter. That's GANNES. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Liz.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Take
care.
Talk to you
soon. All right, feedback time. Matt from Louisville, Kentucky sent us a voicemail. We got a voicemail. This is about Google Glass. Hit it, Matt.
Hi, this is Matt calling from Louisville, Kentucky. In episode 1760, Jason commented, why do you always need that piece of technology on your head, referring to Google Glass or similar technology? As a person who used Google Glass for over 3 years, I only recently stopped using it because it's running Android 4.4 and getting so tired. The absolute number one feature that I miss the most on that device is the hands-free head-up notifications. To this day, there's nothing can't even come close to the convenience of visually seeing those notifications and glancing up. I've been using Android Wear for 3 years now, and it's a pain in the butt to look at those notifications. Even with wrist gestures, there's the issue of having long sleeves on or trying to look at a notification bright sunlight. And even with new features like Google Assistant on the phone, being able to read off your messages in your ear, it still can't compare. Personally, I look forward to the next generation of Google Glass-type device that'll be part of my regular glasses that I'll wear all day long and enjoy notifications in that fashion. And when that happens, I'm taking this damn watch off my wrist. Thanks so much.
All right. Matt is actually a big fan of the network. I've seen his comments on Twitter and beyond in a lot of different places. So thanks for leaving us a voicemail about that. I don't know. Part of what I hear from what Matt is saying is that it provides something that somewhere in the future is going to be something that can be implemented the right way. Mm-hmm. Like, and maybe for Matt, it was implemented right enough for him to continue using it for a long time compared to a lot of other users. 4 years is quite a while to still have, you know, Google Glass in your face and to only have recently taken it off. So obviously there is value there. And I completely agree. When Google Glass first came out, I had to kind of jump to the idea of like the Terminator future, where you have Terminator view, where context is created of the things that are around you, and it's just it's there, and it brings extra information about the world around you. And Google Glass kind of did that, but it kind of also didn't do that to the level that I think we expect or we hope from a future device that sits on your face and does that sort of stuff. You know?
Yeah, I mean,
it was the very beginning.
I get it. Like, I love how I can look at my phone and get emails, whereas, you know, it used to be you had to go to a computer, you know.
Sure.
And I love that I can get them on my watch. And I don't want it necessarily any easier than that. You know, it's like I love getting emails on my phone just as much as I'm crazy annoyed by the people in my life looking at their phone instead of me. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's the same thing. So I just can't imagine that would be so much worse. So I understand what Matt's saying. Like, if you are just using it at work when you're focused, but I just don't. That's not what I saw from Google Glass. And that's not what I would expect humans to, you know, do. I think we're just ingrained to, like, use things more than is good for us.
It's not good for you to have that on your face. Well, yeah, I mean, there is the aspect, from what I hear from what you're saying, and I completely agree, is, like, I went through a phase, I call it a phase, but I went through the smartwatch realm of, like, oh, I love getting all of my notifications on my wrist because now I don't have to pull out my phone anymore. So that's really nice. Still ended up, you know, looking at my watch a lot. And then I entered into a new phase, which was, all right, what I actually want is to interact with this technology less. I don't want it to dictate that the fact that just because something came through means that I have to pay attention to it right now. Mm-hmm. And so I stopped using a smartwatch because I realized that freed me from that capability, from that requirement, let's say. Having something on your face at all times that's always showing you whether you want it to or not, you know, I don't, that's a step backwards for that kind of, I don't know, end game that I reached with the smartwatch. But I don't know. Maybe it's done more thoughtfully at some point in the future. And
yeah, I don't know. I mean,
future.
Yeah, if you're talking about you have a job where you need your hands, mm-hmm. and it's constantly important for you to be getting notifications, I can see that. But
sure.
I think that we get endorphins from getting email notifications, and so we, you know, it becomes this kind of like, oh, I want more.
Mm-hmm.
When really, I think we would be better off just having more face-to-face communication with
sure,
each other.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. TNT's fan of the day is Soren Madsen, who sent us this photo saying he listened to TNT back around Easter time when he started making a raised terrace of hard wood.
Yeah, nice carpentry skills.
Mm-hmm. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Record a video, take a picture of yourself or your setup, post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook, use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it.
Yeah, we will. We'll look everywhere until we find it. We will find it. If you're a designer by trade and you create fonts, and really, I mean, we've all been there, am I right? No. Well, then you know that we all need a trusty word or a phrase to test our newly created fonts out on. I never considered this, but apparently it's true. Type designers have go-to phrases that they use to try out their new fonts. Sometimes they're actual words. Sometimes they're fake words, kind of like fake news, or they're just a jumble of letters and everything. But they all have a purpose, per this article on Wired. Difficult waffles, for example, is a phrase that Burton Hassabe used. I'm probably pronouncing his last name incorrectly. But saying that it's apparently good for testing ligatures in fonts. Like, these different combinations have different reasons for existing. Waverly Hawaiian Havana plywood is good for testing the width and spacing of AWVNY, according to Christian Schwartz. Kerning, says Burke. He says that it's important to pay attention to kerning when you're creating fonts.
So true.
That's the most important thing, according to Burke.
Yeah, I like to say all these words. There's some are so hugger traffico McLagnigan.
Uh-huh, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. I mean, I'm sure that means something, but I couldn't tell you what it means. But they all have different reasons. Like, de kim is a good, like, as you see, and it's out of view there, but good at kind of pairing the apostrophe with the Y, like very specific. Hey, they're really good at what they do. So apparently this makes a whole lot of more sense to a font designer than it does to me.
Plus, no one should eat difficult waffles.
No, stay away from the difficult waffles. Waffles should always be easy and effortless.
True.
As far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. Be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
Come to the subreddit. We are at technewstoday.reddit.com. You can check it out. You can upvote stories. You can downvote them. You can comment on the stories, or you can comment the next day on how we commented about the stories. It's all fun and games. You can also subscribe to the show, and we want you to subscribe to the show. Go to twit.tv/TNT and subscribe anywhere. And what we didn't mention is that we are also available on 60dB. I didn't want to toot our own horn, but we have all our TwitBits there, and you can listen to us there. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to Brian today. Brian Burnett is not only our TD, but he's also our editor, I believe. Mm-hmm. And we appreciate the double duty. Thanks to Burke for helping out and occasional kerning comments. By the way, ZWYKTY, which means ordinary in Polish, has diagonal letter shapes and accents. So a correctly kerned font in Polish will translate near perfectly into other languages. So you were ahead of the curve there, Burke.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he knew. See?
That's
really
is,
smart.
Yeah, that's really some smart. Difficult waffles there.
And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everyone.